Thank you, choir, and you probably noticed we're trying putting the words to what the choir is singing in the bulletin, if you want to follow along, if you're a visual person, that might help what they're singing come home in your heart, so it is a part of your discipleship as well. We are continuing our series looking at the story of Ruth from the Old Testament. She was an outsider who became a key part of the story of Israel. Last week, we talked about how we can help people who feel like they're outsiders to know that they are inside the circle that we draw as a church. And this week we are adding a new character to the story, Boaz. And a lot of this section of the story assumes an extensive knowledge of ancient agricultural practices, which I know all of you are well versed in. I had to look it up, so I'll tell you a few of the key things. The most important thing to know is that in three different places in the Old Testament, God tells people, tells the Israelites to leave sections of their fields unharvested so that the poor and the homeless and the traveler knew that they could actually go into other people's fields and get food for themselves. And it's interesting that God didn't just command, you know, these landowners to like donate food. Instead, they were supposed to just leave the poor an opportunity to come and harvest it themselves. I don't know, it seems there's a little more dignity there than just handouts. Here's one of the places where God says this, Deuteronomy chapter 24. When you reap your harvest in your field and you forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the works of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, don't go over them again. It shall be for the sojourner and the fatherless and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterward. It shall be for the sojourner and the fatherless and the widow. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this. But, as we all know, it's one thing for God to command us to do something and quite another for us to actually do it. We will see in Ruth's story that this was a dangerous task. Some landowners didn't like random poor people coming into their land and picking at the edges of their fields. Other times, the workers in the fields would take advantage of these people, especially if they were young women widows like Ruth. Complicating matters, there weren't like fences in between people's land. The locals would know that Farmer John's land went over yonder, but not as far as the rock shaped like a walrus. You know, but someone who didn't know the local area could very easily walk past that rock into someone else's land. It was very easy for someone to go from a safe piece of land and wind up very unsafe, passing a boundary they didn't know about. You'll also hear several agricultural terms in this. We have reapers, we have gleaning, and we have gathering the sheaves. To use contemporary language, imagine a tractor going over a field of grain, but you know it doesn't get absolutely everything. There's some stuff left over on the ground afterward. Those remnants that are left over, that's collecting the sheaves. The reapers are like the tractor. They're the ones going over quickly harvesting. And then gleaning is the people who are harvesting on the edges of the field like God commanded the landowners to do. And in Ruth's story today, she randomly picks a field where the landowner has left those edges for the poor. That way she can go in and glean. And then she asks if she can go collect the sheaves, the leftovers, after the reaper tractors. And she's doing this because it's the only way for her to actually get food for Naomi and herself. Okay, I can take my farmer hat off now. We're all up to speed on ancient agricultural practice. Ruth chapter 2. Just then Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." They answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "To whom does this young woman belong?" The servant answered, "She is the Moabite who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She asked me, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the reapers.' So she came, and she has been on her feet from early this morning until now, not resting even for a moment." Then Boaz went over to Ruth and said, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Keep your eyes on the field that is being reaped and follow behind them. That's so she wouldn't pass that strange boundary. I have ordered the young men not to bother you. And if you get thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn. Then Ruth fell prostrate on the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me when I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, how you left your father and mother in your native land and came to a people you did not know. May the Lord reward you for your deeds, and may you have a full reward from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Then she said, "May I continue to find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, even though I am not one of your servants." Later on at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some of this bread. Dip your morsel in the sour wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he heaped up for her some parched grain. She ate until she was satisfied and even had some left over. When she got up to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, "Let her glean even among the standing sheaves. Don't reproach her. And you must also pull out some handfuls for her from your bundles and leave them for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. Well, some of you know this, but there was a time earlier in my life when I was so shy I would not ask for more ketchup packets from the Burger King workers. And so it took me a little while to warm up to people, and this did not help me in middle school. In sixth grade, instead of going with the rest of my friends to the public school, I went to a new private school where I knew no one. And just as I was starting to get new friends after a year at this private school in seventh grade, my family moved out of Austin entirely to the sprawling metropolis of Clifton, Texas, 3,500 people, including the only stoplight in the entire county. And I distinctly remember the first day of school in Clifton. Now, when you move to such a sprawling metropolis, it's kind of hard to hide, right? Because you're the only new kid that they've seen in like 3 years. But on the flip side, everyone already has their friends because they've had the same friends since preschool. Not easy to break in. So every new class, I dutifully took my place as close to the back as I possibly could. And in science class, there were tables that were just big enough for two people. So it was always you and a lab partner. And mercifully, there were an odd number of people. So I was able to have my own table at the back until, to my horror, just before class started, one of the biggest kids in the class stood up and started walking back toward me. The teacher wasn't in yet. And I watched as he came to my table and he put down his stuff and he sat down and said, "Hi, I'm Zach. Mind if I sit with you?" From that moment on, I was no longer an outsider. And Zach became one of my best friends in Clifton. Now, my brother, he didn't need someone to come up to him and welcome him. Shyness has never been a word associated with him. His main struggle was, would he insert himself into so many conversations that someone would punch him in the face? Luckily, he's funny, so it worked out okay. But many people, probably most people, aren't quite as comfortable just kind of letting their presence be known like that. Most people need a Zach to take notice, to welcome them, to show to everyone else this person belongs here. And that's what Boaz does for Ruth in our text today. We learn that Boaz is a godly man. We learn that right off the bat by his greeting to his workers. He tells them, "The Lord be with you," and they respond, "The Lord bless you." He is a godly man. He is also compassionate. Because all that is required of him in the Old Testament, you heard it, all that's required is to allow someone like Ruth to glean those edges of the field, and if there are any leftovers, she can come and collect the sheaves. That's all that's required. But he goes so far beyond that. First off, he comes and talks to her. He notices her as a person, not just a widow, not just a poor gleaner, not just a nuisance, a person worth talking to. Second, he tells her that she's safe here. As long as she stays close to Boaz's people, she'll know that she's in the right field and she's safe. He has taken a lot of the stress out of the gleaning process, and it was very stressful. Third, he tells her that she can drink the water that his own servants have brought up for themselves. Drawing water is very physically taxing, and it requires you to stop your gleaning and go over, find the well, then use more energy to get the water out before you can drink it. Instead, she just gets to take a break and drink water that they have drawn up for her. This saves her a ton of time. I don't know if you've ever known anyone who has to like scramble to make ends meet. Maybe they have two or even three jobs, but a rest, a moment to breathe, is an incredible blessing that they almost never get. It's a huge gift for her. Fourth, he lets her know that she's welcomed as part of Boaz's clan. She keeps calling herself a foreigner, but that's not what Boaz calls her. He calls her my daughter. You're part of the family. You belong. Fifth, he lets her join his group for the meal, and she even gets to eat until she is full. That may not sound like a huge blessing in our context, but it reminds me of someone I knew who grew up in a very poor agricultural family, and sometimes they would go, you know, a long time between harvests, or the weather wouldn't be good this year, or, you know, some hail would come in and wipe out a part of their field. And so sometimes their dinner would be, they would take their family out to a restaurant, and their dinner would be water that they pour ketchup into, stirred up to make a kind of tomato soup, until the restaurant owner kicks you out because you're not buying anything, at least. For someone whose dinner is ketchup inside water, can you imagine what kind of blessing it would be to have an all-you-can-eat buffet? Finally, Boaz tells his workers to intentionally drop grain for Ruth as they're working. And undoubtedly, Boaz knows this is going to bless Naomi as well. He knows that Ruth is gathering food for Naomi as well. You see, Boaz doesn't just allow her to gather food in his fields. He doesn't do just what is required by the law. Even that would have made him better than just about everyone else. Boaz instead goes way beyond it. Notices Ruth. Goes out of his way to help her feel like she belongs and blesses her extravagantly. What if our church did that? What if we went beyond our mere requirements? What if we helped notice the outsiders around us? What if we went out of our way to help people feel like they belong, to show them extravagant generosity and hospitality? That's one of the things I love about our monthly free community dinner, that people are welcomed at the door as if they're a guest at someone's home. They're served a meal, on real plates with real silverware, not just disposable. We have table hosts to promote conversation, just as Boaz comes to talk with Ruth. And we're not asking anything of people. It's just a way to bless them extravagantly. And we're going to try to capture some of that sense of generous hospitality in a few weeks. For reference, we had over 200 first-time guests last year. And that's really good. But as with most churches, only a small percentage actually stick around, right? But what if they experienced extravagant hospitality here? What if they were noticed and welcomed and blessed beyond their expectations, as Boaz did for Ruth? Might more have stuck around? We're going to try that actually on February 11th, and hopefully monthly thereafter with a free breakfast. I'll be there, so it's a chance for people, to get to know the pastor a little bit better. I'll tell my faith story. And then we're also going to invite anyone in the church whose birthday is in that month. So if your birthday is in February, or anyone in your family's birthday is in February, you can come on February 11th in between the services. That way, if there's like four guests, it's not a tiny little breakfast, but they get to meet, 15 or 20 other people. And, that's an opportunity, hopefully, to show that this church has a little bit of Boaz in it. We believe that when a guest or an outsider gets to interact with the people of this church, they will feel welcomed like Ruth. And if we add a nice breakfast to it, maybe they will feel extravagant hospitality as well. I mentioned last week that I don't think we're going to be able to grow much as a church unless we connect with the vulnerable, with the outsider, with those who are struggling. And we can't do that by making it about us. We can't say, hey, come to our church, we got an open spot as a deacon, and you look like you'd fit the bill. That's probably not going to work. That's not the model of Boaz. The model of Boaz is to instead show extravagant hospitality, to show deep and meaningful welcome, to take the first step of a relationship, not knowing how it will turn out. And I think this breakfast is a way we can do that. And so if you want this church to follow that model of Boaz, to show extravagant hospitality to the Ruths around us, here's how you can be a part of that. We're good for February. The Open Door Circle has graciously agreed to do the first one. We're good. But we're trying to get this monthly. Can you show hospitality by setting up Ficklin Hall, or by serving the food, or helping clean up, or maybe cooking one of the meals, or by helping conversation at a table? If so, let me know. Do you have the ability to organize things and want to help get those volunteers for the other months? That would be a huge blessing. Let me know that too. Or do you know someone who you could invite to one of these breakfasts? Someone who could use some extravagant Boaz-style hospitality? If so, invite them. And as an added bonus, even if your birthday isn't that month, you can come along with the person you invited. Sisters and brothers, we can do extravagant hospitality. That's in, you know, the skill set of this church, to like Boaz, go above and beyond to help people feel like they belong. But I think we'll need to be a little more intentional about it than we have been. The monthly breakfast will help. But all of us will need our eyes to be open to those who are the Ruths around us. You can't show extravagant hospitality to someone you don't notice. So how can your eyes be open to notice? How can your hands give that tangible and extravagant blessing? If you remember the first text today, it said that Ruth happened to wind up in the field of Boaz. It seemed to her that she was just picking a field at random, but we know God was directing her steps. The same way when a guest comes to our church, when an outsider is looking for welcome, when someone who is struggling is looking for help, they may think that they just happen to come here, to randomly pick a church, but it is God directing their steps. After that, it's our chance to be Boaz. Amen.